autorità, professori, signore e signori, io sono molto lieto di intervenire qui oggi a questo importante evento, in particolar modo nell'ambito della sessione dedicata al ruolo del settore agroforestale per il raggiungimento dei nuovi obiettivi di sviluppo fissati e approvati dalle Nazioni Unite. Come sapete, l'Italia possiede un patrimonio agricolo e forestale unico in Europa, una foresta molto estesa, pari a un terzo del territorio nazionale, e un'agricoltura molto differenziata e di grande tradizione. Insomma, un sistema che racchiude un patrimonio inestimabile di diversità, non solo in termini ambientali, ma anche culturali e produttivi. Il territorio italiano custodisce la storia del secolare rapporto tra uomo e natura, un rapporto colturale e culturale dalle profonde radici etiche, radici che oggi promuoviamo nei principi della sostenibilità, consapevoli che l'agroforestale oggi rappresenta non una nuova pratica finora sconosciuta al mondo agricolo, bensì la riscoperta di un sistema polifunzionale che in epoca preindustriale era già ben consolidato a livello nazionale. Basti pensare ad esempi come la vite maritata, tecnica che si fa risalire addirittura agli Etruschi, ma in via generale si può ricordare come l'associazione di culture erbacee ed erboree, spesso pascolate da mandrie e da greggi, ha sempre fatto parte della tradizione dell'Europa mediterranea. Si tratta di un patrimonio che ci è stato tramandato grazie ad una millenaria gestione attenta e sostenibile che ha cesellato il territorio e disegnato il caratteristico paesaggio agro-silvo-pastorale che tutto il mondo riconosce, che custodisce una elevata diversità bioculturale e che grazie alla cura e alla responsabilità degli uomini e delle donne che popolano le aree rurali e montane del nostro paese è ancora oggi possibile tutelare e conservare attivamente, valorizzando le funzioni ambientali, sociali e produttive. Un sistema, tuttavia, che è stato minato da una crescita dell'agricoltura intensiva e ai cui potenziali benefici non è stata dedicata sufficiente attenzione e che torna adesso di attualità. Entrando quindi nel tema specifico di oggi, è evidente che il patrimonio agro-silvo-pastorale italiano è un asset fondamentale sia dal punto di vista paesaggistico, sia in considerazione dei benefici e delle esternalità positive, anche ecologiche, che può generare su più fronti, permettendo all'Italia di dare il proprio contributo al raggiungimento dei nuovi obiettivi di sviluppo, dall'alleviamento della povertà al sequestro del carbonio, alla conservazione della biodiversità, all'aumento della resilienza dei suoli agricoli, alla purificazione dell'acqua e dell'aria. Come ben evidenziato nel concept dell'evento di oggi, l'agroforestale è in grado di impattare su almeno 6 dei 17 Sustainable Development Goals. Ciò è dovuto, come già accennato, alla multifunzionalità tipica dei sistemi agroforestali, che vanno oltre la logica omologante delle monocolture, diversificando le produzioni e contribuendo allo stesso tempo alla tutela del paesaggio e dell'ambiente. È opportuno ricordare che diversificazione delle produzioni significa anche diversificazione delle fonti del reddito e quindi maggiori strumenti di difesa per gli stessi coltivatori. In uno scenario economico globale incerto e sempre più esposto a fenomeni di volatilità dei prezzi delle derrate agricole. Si tratta quindi di un approccio che ben si sposa con gli obiettivi ambiziosi e vasti, come gli SDG. Da parte italiana abbiamo già cominciato a muoverci nella giusta direzione, io credo, in particolar modo concentrandoci sul contrasto all'abbandono culturale, uno dei grandi temi a livello mondiale presente anche nel nostro paese, e quindi sul ruolo delle popolazioni locali nella gestione e valorizzazione dei sistemi agro-silvopastorali. Penso ad esempio a tutte le iniziative di sostegno allo sviluppo rurale, concentrate nelle aree interne e montane del nostro paese, attuate attraverso una strategia specifica, gestita con le regioni e finalizzata alla rivitalizzazione del tessuto produttivo in chiave sostenibile, anche mediante la gestione del patrimonio forestale. Strategia che si inserisce nel quadro delle azioni di contrasto al dissesto idrogeologico, un altro tema di grande importanza per il nostro Paese. Non solo, abbiamo lanciato un piano per la ricerca in agricoltura, che ha come focus le pratiche agroforestali sostenibili, come nel caso dell'agricoltura di precisione. Desidero porre anche l'attenzione sugli incentivi al contrasto al cambiamento climatico, attraverso l'adozione di pratiche e sistemi culturali resilienti. Inoltre, un obiettivo che riteniamo importante è quello dell'integrazione dei sistemi agricoli e forestali anche nei contesti urbani. Penso ad esempio al fenomeno degli orti urbani, ben presente nelle nostre metropoli, come ad esempio a Milano, città in cui sta nascendo una nuova generazione di infrastrutture e spazi periurbani verdi in armonia con una nuova visione di bioarchitettura. La FAO, con la quale l'Italia intrattiene da sempre rapporti eccellenti, sta seguendo da vicino questo processo. Sono inoltre lieto che negli ultimi anni alla tradizionale collaborazione tra Italia e il Polo Romano delle Nazioni Unite si siano aggiunte anche collaborazioni con nuove realtà associative, espressione della società civile, quale la Fondazione Centro per uno Sviluppo un Futuro Sostenibile, che voglio ringraziare per l'invito e per aver organizzato l'evento odierno. In conclusione, quello che posso dirvi è che l'Italia continuerà a supportare e promuovere l'adozione di moderne pratiche agroforestali, anche in chiave di sviluppo economico. E non mancherà di evidenziarne il ruolo fondamentale per il raggiungimento degli obiettivi di sviluppo sostenibile, sia in ambito europeo che in ambito internazionale. Vi ringrazio.
It is a really great pleasure to stand here to speak, not only from my point of view, but let me also highlight that also on behalf of my colleague, Professor René Castro, who is the Assistant Director General of FAO's Forestry Department. He was originally also scheduled to be here. So this presentation, with also contribution from my colleagues from the Forestry Department, is really a joint one of two departments in FAO. So I would, as our moderator said, focusing on putting agroforestry in the context of achieving SDGs. So I will highlight, first of all, very briefly, agroforestry systems, and then dwell upon agroforestry contributing to these specific SDG goals. And then I will very much highlight just a need for creating an enabling environment to promote agroforestry. So, as we all know, agroforestry systems in the world, more than 10% of tree cover actually is in about 1 billion hectares of farmland, apart from forestries. And this is home to almost a third of the 1.8 billion people who live on farmland. And agroforestry systems represent very diverse systems. As you can see, I will only highlight some specific aspects. First of all, the crops and the trees system. To understand it, let me just illustrate with my own experience. I always say very proudly that I used to work for more than 7 years in Philippines in the International Rice Research Institute, where we always frequently visit such systems as shown on this picture, where you see the rice paddies in the Southeastern Asian countries is surrounded by trees. So from this point of view, understanding the rice paddies system is really the fundamental base to understand the biodiversity, and particularly for what we actually focusing on at that time, integrated pest management. And then you can see that illustrated through this diagram, the pests in the rice paddies also are managed by the natural enemies which are harbored in the shrubs and the trees in the surrounding environment and other beneficial auxiliaries. Also, nowadays in Latin America and Caribbean, it is really a scaling up, already scaled up practice of what we call the silvopastoral arrangements as shown here through these various pictures, as you can see, from wild, let's say, arid and semi-arid systems to quite nicely laid out the trees and crops and livestock. And I'm sure that you will hear more about this from the next speaker, from Dr. Sinclair from ECRAF, the Agroforestry Center. So let me quickly move on to contributing to the SDGs. First of all, agroforestry contributing to SDG 2 and 3, which are zero hunger and also good health and nutrition. Increase and stabilize income through agroforestry, particularly of most vulnerable people, and through diversified products for the people, especially the indigenous people, more nutrient-rich products, such as fruits, nuts, and leaves, from the trees, and the traditional medicines, and also improving the water quality. Agroforestry contributing, again, to SDG 2, 7, and 12, increasing diversity and stabilize agricultural production through improved soil fertility, improves water management, increases contribution of auxiliaries, as I already illustrated, and provides additional products and diversify product production. Contributing to SDG 1, 8, and 10, through the increase of increase and diversify and stabilize rural household incomes and economies, because you have more productive and stable agriculture systems. You have diversified trees as buffers to disasters so as to enhance the resilience of local people. A particularly important role in some vulnerable areas, like arid and semi-arid and the mountainous regions, and particularly important for vulnerable populations, smallholders. Now also, agroforestry or promotion of agroforestry contributing to SDG 5, that's a gender equality. As we know, especially in developing countries, women are often responsible for collecting fuel wood or fodder for the families, and diversify the food source and help improving nutrition for women and children, and facilitate the cooking and reduce the drudgery of a wood collection for women so as to enable other income opportunities, and also increase women's access to cash through selling of products and fruits they collect from the trees and forests. Contributing to SDG 6, 14 and 15, and through strengthening ecosystem services, land and soil conservation, water management, quantity, stability and quality of water, and especially in support of biodiversity in the field, in the soil, and also in the landscape. And now, Also, as already heard from previous speakers in the last session, contributing to SDG 13, more resilient systems and protection against the drought and the erosion, and contributes to reduce emissions and so on. Now, I would just like to highlight that how much touched that I was by the presentation of Professor Valentini in the previous session, to really reconcile agriculture and trees. And what we need to do really is to create or promote an enabling environment to understand traditional systems, the ecosystems and the institutions, characterization and the valorization of tree products, to better characterization of tree genetic resources in order to improve the systems and enable them to adapt to the climate change. And also we need appropriate institutions and policies and support to investments, as well as really to through collective organizations and communities. So this picture just shows you some really modern and scaled up agroforestry with crops and livestock. It's slides that I borrowed from my colleague Dr. Da Silva from Embrapa in Brazil. With that, I want to thank you very much for your attention.
Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, I'm very happy to follow such a clear set of huge benefits from agroforestry for just about everything, which of course is very true, but there are some key trade-offs. And I think trade-off is probably the most important thing that I'm going to say today, because it's managing trade-offs that really matter. In addition to my work at the World Agroforestry Center, I'm the leader of the Livelihood Systems flagship in the CGR research program on forest trees and agroforestry. And the raison d'etre of that research program is to manage the key trade-offs amongst SDGs. So environmental integrity tends to suffer as production increases. So reducing poverty, increasing food security has been associated with degradation of the environment. We're at a key moment now where we can either continue on a degradation or have Earth futures that we want, where we can get synergy between agricultural production and environmental quality. But doing that requires some big changes to the way in which we manage things. So there are three dimensions to agroforestry and climate change. Adaptation and mitigation, obviously, but then the trade-off in relation to what products are we actually and services are we getting from agroforestry landscapes. And of course, these interact not least because diversity is associated with increasing net primary productivity and carbon storage, also resilience of production systems and carbon storage itself. So as we bring in more human dimensions, not just net primary production, but profitability, equity, then the interactions intensify. So there is the potential for situations where there are synergies amongst these elements and we get a triple win. Those are relatively rare. So the optimum tree cover for carbon storage is not the same as the optimum tree cover for water use efficiency at landscape scale or income for people who are farming those landscapes. So we end up managing trade-offs and synergies. And there is a lot of progress going on, but it's critical that this needs to happen across scales and across sectors. Here we are in FAO, and agroforestry is part of forestry, but it needs to cut across other dimensions of energy and agriculture. In terms of scales, we tend to focus on national action, but if things are going to change, they happen much more locally. There is advances in Peru, for example, in the development of NAMAs that are taking different options across contexts into scale right down through provincial down to local landscape scales. And the new GEF integrated approach pilot on fostering resilient food security in Africa is cutting across the environment and the agricultural sector, realizing that global environmental goods require fundamental changes in agriculture. This is from a recent paper in Nature. Some of the same figures about tree cover on agricultural land. And let's be clear, this is trees outside forests on agricultural land. They're responsible already for a large sequestration of carbon, not taken into account by IPCC, about 7 gigatons of CO2 across the globe per year. The carbon pool should be accounted in national inventories, but it's not. And it varies from place to place with regional hotspots of biomass increase and loss. And we need to get finer scale assessments of carbon stocks if we're actually going to manage things at local scales. I said things are different when we go to different parts of the globe. Here in Africa, there are a number of countries where we've seen significant decreases in carbon storage and agricultural land, and others where there have been increases. Remember, this is just on agricultural land. So in Côte d'Ivoire, at the same time as you've had more trees on agricultural land, you've lost forest. So don't mix up what's happening on different land areas. In Asia, we generally see a much more positive situation with mainly increases. The colours here are all blues rather than reds. And that's very much in line with the forest transition curve, moving from degradation and deforestation through monocultural agriculture to reforestation or agroforestation as time goes on. So, in terms of adaptation, there are three key issues. Climate buffering, where we use trees to buffer the effects of climate on crops and maintain productivity by doing it. And then the livelihood and landscape system resilience that is conferred by adding trees. And finally, climate proofing by selecting tree species that are suitable for future climates. Now, climate buffering depends very much on the crop that you're growing, and the anticipated climate change. You see there maps for the areas suitable for growing coffee in East Africa, and you can see that it's decreasing and shifting up to 2050, according to a range of climate models. That means that we can control some of that variation by managing tree shade that reduces temperatures on coffee and improves water relationships up to optimum levels of tree density. And very interestingly, there is a lot of local knowledge about tree attributes that confer these benefits and suitability for integrating with coffee. So by combining high-end science and local knowledge of a variety of trees, we can begin to put together climate smart agricultural responses to change in climate using trees. With wheat, there are interesting examples in Ethiopia where farmers keep trees in fields deliberately. Recent measurements show that you actually get higher wheat yields under trees, not because of the fertility benefits primarily, but because cooler temperatures lead to a longer maturation period and higher yield. So as climate changes, adjusting tree shade can improve that staple food agriculture. In terms of adaptation of livelihoods, trees are critical in terms of affecting soil health, soil fertility, water relations, food, fodder, and fuel, improving productivity per unit of land, labour, and often these interactions are complex within the system. So you may produce firewood on the farm. That means you don't have to go and collect it. You then have labour that you can reinvest in other parts of the farm or livelihood system. So those those complex interactions are important. Sustaining soil fertility is absolutely critical. And new evidence is showing us that you get higher abundance and diversity of beneficial soil organisms, the living parts of the soil, where you keep trees in agricultural systems, and if we compare closer to trees than further away from them. They're refugia for biodiversity in the soil that maintain soil health. So system intensification, managing these interactions within systems, is a key way in which trees can benefit and make livelihoods more resilient. Now, at landscape scales, it's quite clear that we're not going to get everything. These are some trade-off maps that show where in a landscape there are opportunities for increasing agricultural production and where the red areas where they're not. Then hydrological processes and habitat connectivity for biodiversity conservation. And we can see that spatially, we need fine-scale application of policy if we're going to get trees where we want them in order to make impacts on these key ecosystem services. And that's two implementation gaps. Tools to bring evidence to bear to help negotiate landscape change at a local landscape scale. Most tools are at far too coarse a resolution to be able to connect farm and field decisions to ecosystem service impacts. And secondly, to actually have instruments to implement policy at the scales at which ecosystem services need to be managed. So this involves us harnessing complexity. Now, it's always difficult to mention complexity because people want simple solutions. So it's important that we get beyond top-down prioritization and incorporate stakeholder engagement, develop options that suit the different contexts across large-scaling domains, and develop simple steps to get there that can be implemented at national and local scales, involving work across sectors and across scales. I don't expect you to take all that in. What I want to point out is that using a co-learning paradigm, we can, and very modern developments in remote sensing and in information technology, we can increasingly understand variability in context and develop options to suit those contexts. But it involves using research methods, plan comparisons, in development practice. That means across millions of farmers and millions of hectares. And the reason why this is critical is if we look at almost any agroforestry option, you will find that there's a variability of performance across farms. These are national data from Malawi, and you can see that for four options, Fadherbia, Pigeon Pea, Glyricidia, you get Antifrosia, you get farmers having a very wide distribution from yield increases of 4 tons per hectare to negative impacts, depending on their context. And it's critical that we understand what options are going to work for where. We need then to select the options for the appropriate context. And you can see here three different options for establishing new agroforestry in Vietnam. Critically, the middle option is the one that farmers actually favour because it's more resilient and more diverse. But all of these involve an initial investment and a time lag before you get returns. And it's critical that policy addresses smallholder farmers being able to take that step to invest in tree cover. Otherwise, you won't get it on agricultural land. And when we look at the suitability of adoptions across space, we find that we can then map where different options will work. If we then look at provincial level policy change to incentivize agroforestry, which has just happened in Yen Bai in northwest Vietnam, then we get very quick uptake and very high values at a provincial level over a 15-year period. But we need that injection of investment at the beginning to get it going. As products increase, if people do adopt, you also need to grow the market. So connecting to the value chain is critical for sustaining tree cover. This is an example of stakeholder engagement in DRC, in Democratic Republic of Congo, increasing the options available. Quite often, what people are pushing is one or two exotic species. Grevillea robusta, eucalyptus in woodlots. This doesn't result in resilient livelihoods and landscapes. If you engage local people who generally have a lot of knowledge about trees that have been or are still in the landscape, you end up with much more diverse and inclusive options. So, for example, here around the Virunga National Park, you can see that women wanted fast-growing fruit trees for processing into jam and juice that they could make money from, as well as fertilizer species. The indigenous Batwa people, who were actually moved from the park when it was gazetted, wanted melliferous species to support their honey production. Livestock keepers wanted windbreaks, and there were key roles for trees to protect water courses. Now, it's not just that you need to push people to incorporate trees. In some circumstances, they're doing it themselves. Farmer-managed natural regeneration across the Sahel, around 5 million hectares in Niger alone, involving improving livelihoods for 2.5 million people. And in an impact study in Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, and Senegal, FTA found that benefits correlated with more tree density and maturity, with crop yields 15 to 30% higher, depending on tree species, location, and crop type, and about $200 a year extra income when only 10 to 25% of harvested product was actually sold. So these things work, providing we get the right options for the right context. But we need to be very clear that changing values of carbon can create losers as well as winners. And issues of equity, vulnerability, and empowerment are critical. If we want to have subsidiarity in decision-making that allows the right options to be designed and chosen locally, then we need appropriate transfers of power and development of agency amongst key marginalized groups if it's going to work. So let me finish with a message about the transformative power of trees. There is definitely scope for more trees on agricultural land in many places for climate mitigation and adaptation. But trade-offs with production need to be managed. There are no silver bullets. More tree diversity is critical to achieve resilience. So scope for better and more equitable management of existing tree cover can be done without as much of an investment to cover the time lag with new trees. But we need new policy approaches and investments that harness rather than ignore complexity across sectors, across scales, and that bridge the time lag between smallholders investing in trees and the returns that they get. Thank you.
Excellency, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for inviting me here and for being here to listen also to this last presentation. Differently from what we heard until now, we got a very nice overview at the global scale and in Africa and other continents on the role of agroforestry. I will focus mainly in Europe, being also representative of the European Forest Institute. Now, we heard a lot of information about the importance of agroforestry all over the world. In Europe, sometimes we wonder whether trees are put at the margin of agro ecosystems. Actually, if we observe some of the landscape from many parts of Europe in the last 50, 60, 70 years, actually we can observe that trees and forest trees have been put away from quite often from agro ecosystem from agriculture. There has been, if I can say, a kind of specialization of the landscapes and of the land uses. That, of course, has also reduced the many of the ecosystem services that are and were provided by agroforestry. Agroforestry, though, is a very old land use system, land cropping system, that goes back to the Greek, to the Roman, and also to the Middle Age time. We have nice picture mosaics about these very special, let's say, combination of trees, forest, and agriculture in many parts, mainly of the Mediterranean world. This morning, Honorevole Rutelli was talking about the presence and the fight of these trees versus agriculture. But actually, Romans already long time ago found the usefulness of the combination of these different cropping system. And we can still see some of these land use system, for instance, in the very tall piantate. It was mentioned actually a few minutes ago by Vice Minister Olivero. Very tall one, as I said, almost 20 meters, vineyards and poplar combination. Of course, the problem is that the social and the economic environment has changed in the last 50, 60, 70 years. And of course, there is also difficulties from this point of view. So basically, we have to find and we have to work, we have to look for also new ways, innovative ways for combining forestry and agriculture and trees. But as you can see, we come from a very interesting, nice and useful, let's say, history of this combination. So we have to thrive on this. This is an image also from a Middle Age picture from central Italy. Here, just some picture of the different types of agroforest system diffused in many parts of Europe. Some less innovative, some traditional, some quite modern and very interesting. For instance, if you go down to the right, to that picture of the valuable tree plantation, is a mixed type of plantation, mixing different trees, valuable wood trees with fast-growing trees, trees that fix nitrogen with trees that utilize the nitrogen fixed by the other trees. And very interestingly, they have a different architecture from a canopy point of view, but even more interesting, we do not see it, they have a very nice and different architecture of the root system so that they can exploit the water and the other resources of the soil in a very efficient way without competing among the different species. So we have to look not only above ground, but sometimes in order to understand the best combination of agroforest system, we have to look below ground. Here, just some information, just a map on the diffusion of agroforest system all over Europe. This is a quite recent map that gives us the value, the digit, the number of about 15 million hectares of agricultural surface and of European surface covered by agroforest system. All over Europe, but as you can see, mainly in the Mediterranean region. So this is also interesting to study agroforestry also as a way to, let's say, intensify cooperation among the north and the south rim of the Mediterranean region. Other regions where agroforest is present is the central European region, the Atlantic, and also the eastern one. But one key issue here is that We need also a regional specialization. So we need to study agroforestry system devised and, let's say, designed for the different environment of Europe and not only Europe, of course. I think that Dr. Juan has very brilliantly and very exhaustively presented all the different interaction between sustainable goals and sustainable development goals and agroforestry. So I'm not going to, let's say, to spend much time on this picture, but at least five, six different development goals can be very effectively met by agroforestry land use system. I just want to give you some example. First of all, the soil. Our colleague from Benin has argued very effectively how important are trees for soil conservation. And not only, of course, above ground, but also we have to examine the role of the roots below ground. Obviously, the poorly managed agro ecosystem could deplete at least part of this fertility, whereas forest system on the left hand are very effectively in protecting and also in recycling nutrient that are the basis for plant and ecosystem productivity. So this is why basically the combination of trees and crops provide a very good solution not only for a production or a biodiversity point of view, but specifically for conserving soil and conserving or even improving land fertility and land sustainability. So here just few images for underpinning these different issues. For instance, one very important problem in all over the Mediterranean and particularly in Italy are the sloping land and the erosion that can happen if we take away trees and perennial plants. And this is why, for instance, utilizing trees in contour strips or in other, let's say, cropping system could be particularly important. And in order to do this, we really need small experimental watershed to demonstrate, not only to study and to do, let's say, research, but also to demonstrate to the farmers how important and how useful could be trees, let's say, appropriately organized in order to reduce erosion and also the risk of landslide. Again, another type of sustainable development goal, water quality, could be much improved by the use of tree strips within the agricultural environment. For instance, here are some examples of buffer strips along channel or even small creeks or also rivers in order to not only to protect the soil, but also to protect the aquifer, to protect the groundwater. This is an example in the Po Valley near Venice, and the role of these trees could ameliorate the water quality by 50, 60, 70%, taking away not only the excess of nutrients, for instance, but also other pollutants like, for instance, herbicides and so on. Again, let's say strips and hedgerows could be, of course, very much important also from a biodiversity and landscape point of view. About mitigating climate change has been already and clearly discussed before my presentation. I want only to underline that agroforestry, according to IPCC, is one of the best and most important system, land use system in the world for capturing carbon and CO2 and other greenhouse gases. But in order to, let's say, innovate the agroforestry system in order to devise agroforestry system for present day needs in agriculture and in general by the economy, we need also to have a better understanding of their role, for instance, from the interaction with greenhouse gases or how to improve production. Here is, so we need more research and more demonstration experiments on agroforestry. This is just an example of a very detailed experiment that was conducted in Belgium on agroforestry plantation in order to understand all along the entire life cycle of the plantation their role from a greenhouse gas, balance point of view, not only carbon, but also other greenhouse gases, like, for instance, ozone, like, for instance, nitrogen oxide, like, for instance, VOC, in order to understand globally how this type of crops, affect the carbon balance in general. And also, it is quite important to have an understanding of the energy efficiency, on the overall energy efficiency of this type of, land use system. In particular, this is a biomass plantation. And from this data, you can just get an idea of the sustainability of this type of system, either from greenhouse gas emission or also energy balance. Just another picture, just to show that research is quite active in order also to study and to experiment different, genotypes, different species in order to improve not only productivity but also resilience to climate and global change of agroforestry system. What I want to show, I mean, I have just two last message to try to get through now. One is the role of forestry and agroforestry in Europe, but not only in Europe, not only from a bioeconomy by point of view, but also, as you can see from the y-axis, also from the ecosystem services point of view. We have noticed that, for instance, in Europe, the larger is the contribution of the forest sector to the GDP of a given country, also the larger is the contribution to mitigation and in general to ecosystem services provision by forest and agroforest system. So this means that the two things to be environmental beneficial and to economically beneficial can go, together. Of course, there is also a matter of trade-offs, as it was pointed out before, but the two aspects can go hand in hand. So basically, we can really look forward to the development of a real bioeconomy, a real economy based on bio resources. The other aspect that I want to stress, and I am going to close the presentation, is the importance of, international cooperation. Just in these, in these months, European Union is fostering the development of an international bioeconomy forum involving different countries, not only European Union, US, China, Canada, many countries all over the world, in order to set up, the basis, the foundation for a bioeconomy that should be integrated on the economic scale, but also economic sectors, but also integrated worldwide. And agroforestry and forestry can play their role. Here is an example, for instance, of agroforestry in France and Italy, combining trees, poplars, or other tree species with cereals, for instance, with agricultural crops. The same landscape you can find it in China, for instance, in Nanjing and in other provinces. And interestingly enough, particularly and specifically in China, we have a strong history and a long history of cooperation between Italy and China, because China has, in the last 30, 40 years, planted more than 7 million hectares of poplars. And interestingly enough, 3 million of these hectares are planted with Italian genotypes. Of course, this doesn't mean that we have to go on with genotypes coming from other continents. And in fact, China is now developing native poplars for plantation. But, I mean, we have been cooperating on this for many and many years. And as you can see, thank also to the FAO, the cooperation between China and Italy has started a long time ago in 1973 when a first delegation of the China Ministry of Forestry and Agriculture visited Italy, bringing back the first poplar cutting. So this is just to underline the importance of international cooperation also in the field of agroforestry. So I'm just going to synthesize. Agroforestry, an old land use system with large potential also for the future. Still vast surfaces covered by agroforestry in European Union, but we need also to innovate this land use system. Of course, the European Union agricultural policy is going, is giving us, I think, quite a good support for the next period, 2014, 2015, up to 2020. And we absolutely need also to combine these possibilities, this potential, these incentives by the European Union to new farming system, also with the landscape planning dimension. And I'm very happy that this morning Riccardo Valentini underlined and stressed this point. There is also a need for capacity building at the farming level, utilizing also experimental demonstration system, and we need also, as I argued, for a strong development of international cooperation in agroforestry research. Thank you.
Actually, the main objective is that the climate change. Of course, it's the burden of all the countries in the world, for the developing and the developed countries. But I could have seen some two different things. You see, as it has been mentioned, agroforestry is one of the methods of resilience for the climate change, and that's definitely yes. But the agroforestry system in the developing country has gone very widely, and it has reached very far. But on the other hand, when you see in the developing country, and particularly in Africa, as it has been mentioned by His Excellency Ambassador Dina, well, most of the countries, they do the theory part, the signatory agreement, the policy rules, regulations, and so on and so forth. But when we come to the practical aspect of agroforestry in these countries, it is very low. So what I propose is that all the developing and the developed countries has to go in the same wavelength so that we can combat the effect of climate change. And in this context, I could have also mentioned some examples of the presenters like Mr. Stefania and His Excellency Andrei from Italy. They are doing very well in Italy, and they have also extended their support in African countries such as in Ethiopia, Ecuador, and so on and so forth. But what I propose is that there should be a very concrete mechanism, either guided by the FAO or any other, so that we can introduce this agroforestry efficiently in Africa, parallel to the development system in the developed countries. So, well, at the end of the day, I could also ask, what is the strategy and the mechanism to develop this particular agroforestry or conservation agriculture or any other systems which can help in climate change in Africa? What is the concrete mechanism we have adopted? Otherwise, we'll have a gap even for the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and we'll say the same. So please, thank you very much anyway for the highlighting and very nice presentation. Thank you.
My name is Paolo Sertoli. I'm from the Italian Agency for Development Cooperation. Parlerò in italiano. Il grosso dubbio che c'è quando si parla di sistemi agropastorali, agrosilvopastorali, è quello di combinare l'aspetto climatico con la produttività, in quanto spesso, soprattutto in paesi in via di sviluppo, si pensa soprattutto ad aumentare le rese, quindi la produttività agricola, piuttosto che migliorare l'ambiente. Quindi una domanda che faccio un po' anche provocatoria, se vogliamo, come fare ad abbinare i sistemi agrosilvopastorali con la crescita invece delle produzioni, che spesso è un obiettivo di gran parte dei paesi in via di sviluppo? Grazie.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question and something I was trying to touch upon in obviously was a very short presentation. I think the first comment as well refers. People keep talking about agroforestry systems, and it's a nice term, but actually they're often not systems. What you have is trees in other systems, trees in agricultural systems. And we saw from the presentation that there are very different ways in which trees can provide products and services within agricultural systems. And quite a lot of what they're doing is providing services, some of which increase yield. So let's just take a couple of key examples. In Africa, about 30% of soils are now non-responsive. So as a result of the use of chemical fertilizer without other elements, you've ended up with a breakdown in soil conditions, which also means low carbon in the soils in terms of carbon storage, but also problems with crop yield. Even if you put fertilizer on, the soils don't respond. Trees can quite often increase abundance and activity of soil organisms that can bring back that responsiveness in soil fertility. So it's not always the case that introducing trees will reduce productivity. There are a number of cases where it will actually increase productivity. It depends a little bit on what other inputs are being used. And if we're talking about efficient use of water and nutrients, then again, the tightening of nutrient and water cycles as a result of trees improving infiltration in some situations and groundwater recharge, again, is important. But it's not simple. So what we're talking about here is many different types of tree species, different densities, and we need to get the right density and diversity of trees to balance the production and service roles. And that's why I was arguing for this options by context approach, where we move away from silver bullets and towards matching things properly to local context. Now, that does require a big change both in development practice and in research. At the moment, on the whole, in development, there's not a lot of evidence. People do push a few solutions across wide areas without adapting them adequately to local circumstances. On the other hand, researchers working with far fewer resources tend to only concentrate on pilot sites and therefore don't develop solutions that will suit all of those variable contexts. We need to bring those two things together so that the large resources for development, instead of just scaling out what we know, we acknowledge what we know and what we don't know and build in co-learning as we move on so that we can refine solutions to local circumstances. And then we can do something. But that needs to be part of the policies right from a national level. Otherwise, it won't happen.
Very, very briefly, of course, I agree with 100% or 1000% with what was just said by Fergus. I want just to add also from a policy point of view, maybe I'm going to be a little provocative, but I think that we have also to look cross-sectorial. For instance, there is the RED and RED Plus, let's say, programs for forestry. Why don't we think also to something similar, for instance, for agroforestry? So combining issues from agriculture and the forest side. For instance, in Europe, I know that it is quite controversial. I mean, there are all the incentives to agriculture and to farmers in Europe is a very controversial issue. But we have also to look at the positive aspect that some of these, let's say, incentives are in order to improve the so-called agro-environmental, let's say, role and services provided by agricultural system. Why not thinking also to something like this also for other countries supported within, for instance, the big international convention?
I'm representative of the permanent representation of China to FAO. The first, I would like to say, I would like to express the sincerely thanks and the high reputation for FAO, for the Ministry of Agriculture of Italy, and for the permanent representation of Italy, and my colleagues to organize so very good activities today. This conference is so important, is so useful, especially so many scholars, officers, deliverers, keynote speech to give us so many very important information. Today I learned a lot. Thank you very much. But now I would like to say I haven't questions, but I would like to say only a few hopes and suggestions. The first, how can we carry out or implement the sustainable development agenda? Okay, I would like to say at present, the very important issue is please to innovate policies. When we have good policies, we can mobilize the enthusiasm, both the central government and the local government in the state members of FAO. Even when we have good policies that can also supervision and oversight the responsibility of statement, the government, and the good carry out the implementation of SDGs. The second, I would like to say, today so many scholars introduced so many very good approach, a very good method how to carry out SDGs. I think that is very good because so many scholars, scientists, and technicians work very hard to have so many research funding. But at present, I think very important issue is how can we promote and enhance so many good research funding into the applied technology. That means the farmers can use in rural areas. That is very important. The last but not least, my suggestion is at present, okay, how can we very good to implement SDGs? That means we should pay great attention to promote and enhance the capacity building and to build good working conditions. Therefore, now I would like to say in September 2015, okay, the developed countries, okay, say a very good the target. That means at present, how can developed countries fulfill the commitment? That means the per year, the $100 million contribute to the developing countries. That is very important working conditions. Okay, at present, developing countries need more technology transfer and need more technical assistance. We need the contributions from the developed countries to developing countries. Now, we would like to hear the new adapted roadmap and timetable and the new information about $100 million from developed countries. Therefore, I think that is very important. Okay. Thank you again for organizer.
So to conclude this session, I would like just to recall three words that were said throughout all the sessions. And the first one is urgency. We are running late, not just with this conference, but in the fight against climate change. Our carbon budget is finishing, and we, the people that are always talking about climate change, we are always working with this sense of urgency. And so the second one of this second session is, of course, trees. We have been speaking about trees and agroforestry. And I think it's clear to all that there is a space for a more important role for both tree planting and agroforestry in fulfilling not just climate change goals, but also sustainable development goals. And the third world, I think it's complexity, because it takes us also to the necessity of integration. We spoke about climate change, hunger, forestry, politics, diplomacy, climate science, economics, Africa, Europe, climate science, technique. So about a full range of sectors, a full range of countries, states, and situations. So at this time, integration and collaboration are not just an option, are a must for our future.